Countdown. Hey, this is the way it should be. I'm good with it.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. It is 2 o'clock on Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. I'd like to call the Ponsonlet Town Council to order. I would ask that everybody please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like the record to show that all council members are present and in council chambers, and please all remember to complete the citizen participation request form if you wish to speak on an item that is not listed as an agenda item and provide it to our town clerk. We are at item 4, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Are there any from anyone?
Nope.
Okay. Seeing none, then I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as modified. Item 5 is our citizen participation, and this is the time that the public has the opportunity to come to the podium to speak with us for one time, 5 minutes, on an item that's not on the agenda. And please make sure to speak into the mic and provide us with your first and last name and your street address. John Carney.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the time to be here. My name is John Carney. I'm at 86 Rains Court in Ponce Inlet. And the reason I wanted to come speak is that I truly appreciate the amount of effort and work you put into this town and all the council members. It's not easy doing your job, and you guys take it very seriously, and I appreciate that. One of the things that I'm seeing an issue with is the town's budget. I mean, I think we all got our tax assessments yesterday. When I look at the assessment, I see that half of the assessment just about goes to Ponce Inlet and the other half goes to the county. And the county's providing schools, they're providing other things that Ponce doesn't have to do, and they also provide the same services Ponce provides for the non-incorporated pieces of the county. So it seems like the efficiency with which Ponce Inlet is providing those services is not quite the same. And when you look at the budget overall, I think it kind of bears this out. If you go back 10 years, the town's budget was about $5 million a year, and right now it's a little over 10, so it's doubled in that time. And that may or may not be a problem, but if you look back just 4 years ago, the budget's gone up 69% over those 4 years. And I don't think our population's gone up 6.9%, much less 69%. And so, I mean, it may just be that assessments went up, and so with the assessments, the budget grew and those kind of things. And my concern is this, is that is, you know, the town bureaucracy is sort of like a living organism. It just wants to grow, and the town budget wants to grow, and there's a lot of wants there in that budget that aren't truly needs. They're just things the town would want to have. And your guys' job is really to intercede on behalf of the citizens to say, no, the town might want that, but let's be realistic about what's required in order to provide the services that are needed by the citizens. You know, the town is really supposed to be here to serve the citizens, not the other way around. And it looks to me like right now, you know, the citizens are paying in to serve the wants of the town. And when you dig even deeper into the budget, you know, it seems to me that it's getting just worse and worse every year, because the things that are being done, it's one thing if you spend a whole bunch of money and you bought some things that can help the budget decrease in the future, and if you spent money to pay down debt, which we haven't done, or you spent some money on capital things, which can reduce the budget in the future. But the spending that I see not only costs money today, it's also going to cost more money in the future. And some of those items, I mean, we keep increasing the number of personnel, the number of police officers, the number of firefighters, the number of administrative people. Just the town staff is growing. And again, I don't see the demand side from the citizens. I mean, we're all about the same number of citizens. Why does it take that much more staff to provide the necessary services? I don't understand that. But then, too, when you get into the capital budgets, you look at what's going on with the purchase of police vehicles. You know, it seems like the town used to purchase the vehicles, and then the police department would use those for, I don't know, 5, 10 years, whatever the lifespan of the vehicles is. And I noticed last year we started leasing vehicles, and this year there's more leases. And there's leases not only in the police department but also in public works. And if you look at personal finance, you know, one of the cardinal rules of personal finance, if you ever want to be wealthy and you don't want to be poor, is you don't borrow money to buy things that are depreciating assets. It's just kind of simple economics. And that's the same for the town. We shouldn't be borrowing money for depreciating assets like police cars. If the town needs a police car, we need to budget and buy a police car. We shouldn't be borrowing it through a lease. And that allows you to maybe buy something that doesn't make any sense. And I see, you know, we now are buying very expensive GMC four-wheel drive quad cab pickup trucks. You know, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more expensive domestic vehicle on the lot than that kind of a vehicle. And I don't think that is necessary for a police officer to do their job. You know, it's just, it's an exorbitant expense that we shouldn't be bearing as a taxpayers. And along those same lines, you know, I don't understand, why don't we buy the things outright? If there is a justifiable need for those pickup trucks, and maybe you convince me there is, but so far nobody's made that case, you know, then the town should budget and buy it and use it. It shouldn't be borrowing money for these items, you know. And another thing sort of related to that is the police boat that I see in the budget for next year. I mean, the town's gotten by this long without a police boat. Seems like we do okay. We've got the Coast Guard that's nearby. You know, the sheriff has responsibility for the beach. They probably have responsibility for a lot of the waterways. We should be able to work with the sheriff to say, hey, we need some more coverage here in this little slice of water that you have responsibility for, in this little area that Ponce has as well. You know, so I'm not sure if we've pursued that option. But, I mean, buying a boat is very expensive. And, it, again, it's going to cause the budget to balloon out in the future. All these leases, as vehicles go out of service and you lease another vehicle, I mean, we're paying $1,000 a month for these vehicles right now. I don't know how many vehicles the town has. But as that number keeps rolling to lease from own, it just balloons out, you know. And I haven't seen the fuel budget and the personnel budget adjusted to go with all these things. I mean, the police boat is going to have $5 a gallon ethanol-free fuel put in it. It's going to have to be staffed. It's going to have to be maintained, you know. And I just think if the town was flush with money, maybe that's all good stuff to go and do. But, you know, when we're spending money that we don't really have because we're borrowing money to go buy police cars that we do need, I don't see why we're buying things that aren't necessary at this point in time.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it because we do need the input of our residents. Is, you know, that we have a tentative millage rate, that this is not set yet. It's set at the highest amount that it's going to go, and between that time and, is it September 4th, Mike?
Yeah, that's our first hearing.
That's our first hearing for the budget, and we will all have an opportunity, the council members and you, to discuss this further. You know, we've had several workshops.
Yes.
And I'm not sure, I'm sorry, I don't remember if you were there. But in the workshops, we did discuss many of the items, some of which may come out. So we're not yet at that end, but I want you to know, all of us, including the department heads, are available to you if you want to drill down a bit and ask very specific questions about the needs that they have requested. So I want you to know the information is there to helpfully address some of your questions, and it may make us a lot sharper. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Obeck.
Mark Obeck, 4758 South Peninsula Drive. Good afternoon, Council. Regarding the budget, last month I spoke fairly passionately about looking at the budget in terms of being able to address all those things that have been pushed down the road. I don't regret any of what I said last month. I do regret the manner in which I said it. Believe it or not, I tend to be passionate about things, and I let that passion get away from me a bit, and so I apologize for sounding as harshly or sounding as harsh as I did in last month's meeting. But I still am absolutely reticent in what I believe is the need for this town to address those things that have gone waiting for all too long. Secondly, I was glad to see that the design phase of the sidewalk project is being starting, I believe, this coming month. I would just like, again, to get the assurances from town council that once that design is complete, that the residents along Peninsula will have the opportunity, multiple opportunities, to review that design and provide some feedback. That's all. Thank you.
Mark, thank you very much. We do appreciate you coming and speaking. Steve Field.
I guess Steve Field, 6 Mars, a little north. I just wanted to continue the discussion I had with the council last meeting when we talked about the tax base in this town going up 8 or 9%. And certainly I thought an 8 or 9% increase in the budget, which would have required no increase in the tax rate, would have been sufficient. Mr. Milano, you were a principal somewhere, and if the superintendent said to you, I'm going to give you a 9% increase in your budget with no significant increase in headcount or anything, you'd have been dancing all the way home. Skip White, if you told your warehouse guys or your operating plant guys that you were giving them a 9% increase and no increase in revenue or anything required, they'd have been very happy. Yes. So I want you guys to... I came today because you have 2 weeks before September 4th to really think about this and think about what we've done. I got my tax bill yesterday. 14 different taxing authorities, right? How many increased their millage? Do you know?
Well, I know the county did not, and I
two.
Do.
Two out of 14.
Right.
The rest of them either held it the same or reduced the millage. Mm-hmm. You guys just need to think about it. I bought a condo over in the Shores in 2003. Paid a nice amount of money for it. 2006, I could have sold it for twice as much. In 2008 and 2009, I couldn't sell it for what I bought it for in 2003. Let's not be it's fool's gold if we think that the prices of houses are going to continue to go up. We have to be careful about how we spend the money. We need to spend it on things we need, not things that are nice to have.
Thank you very much. Chad, Marine Science Center, Chad, please come up. Chad McPhee.
Chad McPhee, Manager, Marine Science Center, 100 Lighthouse Drive. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. I'm here to provide an update on the Marine Science Center. The water and utilities project has begun to right-size the water and sewer lines. It was necessary to clear a 15-foot path to trench, install, and backfill the sewer line. We have a robust landscaping plan in development that will start to naturalize the area impacted with Florida native trees, shrubs, and plants that are intended to provide food and habitat for wildlife, especially birds and insects. The plan will be submitted to the town of Ponce Inlet for approval. The capital project, including education building, interior renovations, and exhibit replacements, should begin shortly with the notice to proceed. The MSC will be closed to the public from September 2nd until around Memorial Day for the improvements. The animal hospitals will remain open during this time to rehabilitate injured and sick sea turtles, tortoises, and birds. We look forward to a grand opening when the work is completed and will work closely with the town to ensure a well-planned opening event. We continue to improve our educational programming centered around raptor conservation with our Florida Native Plant and Tree Initiative. Since opening the raptor exhibit in December, staff have worked hard to research, plant, maintain, and educate the public about the importance of native plants to Florida's coastal habitats and food web. We are very excited to announce that we have created, not as mitigation, but as educational tools and habitat development, the interpretive trail that contains 36 different species of plants, shrubs, and trees that total over 201 new plants that we've planted since December, and those were all by staff. The improvements inside the exhibit gallery include updates to the educational exhibits. A new artificial reef exhibit will highlight the benefits of Volusia County's artificial reef program. A new exhibit will imitate the steel-hulled vessel Leda Filmina resting on the seashore. A new living shoreline exhibit will educate the public on the importance of living shorelines and new technology to create habitat from seawalls. We are really excited about a new opportunity to provide experiences to high school and college students on coral growth research. The new Living Reef Exhibit and Working Coral Lab will give these students real-world experience designing experiments, growing corals, collecting data, and analyzing results. Thank you for your time, and please reach out to me if there are any questions about the Capital Project or the MSC in general. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming here and providing us with the update. We do appreciate it, and we certainly appreciate the Marine Science Center. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Chad.
Shannon White.
I'm Shannon White, 39 Coastal Oaks. I'd like to know how many employees does Ponce Inlet actually employ?
Do we have a number that we can provide?
Yeah, a little over 70.
A little over 70?
70, okay. How many vehicles do we operate? Or
I believe that's in the 30s, mid-30s.
Okay, all right. And how many of them are leased and how many of them are owned?
Tell you what, at this point, I'm going to ask Chief Scales to come up. He's the one that manages these leases. He can give you those exact numbers.
I believe we're leasing 11 vehicles.
So the rest are owned?
Yeah. Chief, the rest are owned?
Yes.
Is there any debt there on those vehicles?
The debt, no. No, the ones that have been purchased, we don't purchase that way.
Okay.
So there's no debt there.
Well, I agree with an earlier statement about leasing versus purchasing. You know, I mean, it's an ongoing cost. And were the 11 vehicles all leased at the same time?
It's over a two-year period.
Over a two-year period, okay. Because we need to allocate on an annual basis, you know, I mean, and taking a hit for 6, 11, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, you need to kind of budget things out, as we have established before. And it is my concern that, you know, the current economic conditions and the uncertainties, you know, have bared out throughout time in our life. Several of us have gone through downsizing, layoffs, and if you read the news or adjustments in employment or unemployment, you know, and so we need to manage our money accordingly, you know, and really, do we have a short-term, are we clear on our short-term goals and our long-term goals, and do they mesh? Because if we're just spending money as it's coming in, then, you know, we're going to get hit again, as time has told over history. And it's very concerning that, you know, we see these new vehicles running around here, the number of them, the number of employees we have for the size of town that we have. And, you know, we're dealing with property values going up, costs going up, insurance costs going up, maintenance costs, utility costs. I mean, everybody's being faced with this. And, you know, it gets passed on to the homeowner, you know. I mean, so we really need to understand the compounding cost year after year, because it, you know, we when we talk about numbers, about 6%, 8%, 9%, it's on top of what we just dealt with last year and the year before and the year before. So this compounding interest has become very hard to bear to a lot of the public. And I just really want us to understand that, you know, when we're just, if we're short-sighted and just looking at 1 year, that's not right. That is not right. We have to look at both past, present, and the future and really look at what we have done over the years and how it has, since I've moved here in 2008, the cost have just skyrocketed, you know. And you see it in the budget. You see it in our tax bills. And I just really think we need to take a hard look at how we spend our money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do appreciate you speaking. Kimberly Comfort.
Hi, good afternoon. Kimberly Comfort, 85 Ocean Way Drive. I'm coming before you because I pay attention to all the different boards and meetings. I don't necessarily attend them because it's not easy for me to do so. But I did note that there was a code enforcement meeting that a person was fined for having a dumpster in their driveway. We allow those pods. I've seen them for, I had a cousin had it for a year in her driveway. I don't necessarily love them, but we allow them. I just want us to consider the fact that we say we only allow these dumpsters in a driveway for construction. When my grandmother passed away in Massachusetts, my father, mother, and I and my brother, we all went up there, and in 1 week, we had to empty a house that had been built in 1917 and occupied until 2009. And we had to rent the largest dumpster they could bring. And they had to park it in her driveway, and we put, you know, trash in the dumpster. We put stuff that people would want, like toboggans and things that the person who comes to estimate how much your stuff's worth. I can't remember the name of that. But they said, oh, it's not worth anything. And then we find out, you know, they want to empty our house for free at the end. But by that point, we're like, okay, we've donated all, we've given it all. But I think it's important that as a town, we have a time limit. And we say, like, in particular for a dumpster, we don't say it's only allowed for a construction site. That we make a point that says maybe 1 week, maybe 2 weeks. But give a family who's in particular grieving, trying to empty a family's house, an opportunity to have that dumpster there to make it as convenient as possible, arranged that, you know, we even had to arrange for hazmat because with kerosene, all this kind of stuff was found in the cellar. So we're not going to likely have that in any homes here, but I just think we need to allow that a dumpster be present on someone's lot for a limited time. I mean, like I said, I'm not crazy about these pods out here for a year. That's a long time to just be staring at things. But if we could limit it to 1 or 2 weeks and just even if you have to bring a death certificate or you're moving somebody to an assisted living home and we're emptying their homes to prove that that's why you need it there, I just think we need as a town to consider that
Kimberly,
for the future.
Thank you. So. Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention, and I'm sure it's something that we can look into and see whether we can make this a broader ordinance under the circumstances. But I appreciate what you say. Thank you.
I appreciate it. I just, when people are grieving, and it's a hard time as it is. So.
As
thank
it is,
you.
Yes. Thank you very much. I have no more pink slips. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak? Seeing none, I'm closing citizen participation. Okay, now we are at our proclamations, presentations, and awards. Is Barbara Ann Hegan here? Okay, we're going to move on. There was a presentation, and we'll find out what may have happened there. Let's go to 6B. These are the proclamations. There are two. In recognition of Patriots Day, I will be presenting a proclamation to our first responders on Wednesday, September 11th, at the fire station, declaring September 11th as a day of remembrance. And in recognition of information technology professionals, I will present a proclamation to the Ponce Inlet IT Department, declaring the week of September 16th to the 20th as Information Technology Professionals Appreciation Week, and declaring Tuesday, September 17th, as National IT Professionals Day. A copy of the proclamations may be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. Now, item 7 on our consent agenda. We have four items on the consent agenda. Does anybody wish to pull an item? Anyone in the audience wish to pull an item on our consent agenda? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, now item 8. This is a request for co-sponsorship of the Friends of the Marine Science Center's Ocean Harvest Market event. Mike?
Jackie Alex is going to present this one.
Hello, Mayor and Council. Jackie Alex, Cultural Services Manager. The Friends of the Marine Science Center will be hosting the Ocean Harvest Market as a fundraiser for the Marine Science Center on September 28, 2024. The event will be held at the Community Center with vendors inside selling items. As it will include food trucks, the event requires a special event permit from the town. The Friends Group is requesting co-sponsorship for waiver of the special event permit fee. The town updated its special event regulations in August of last year, and pursuant to the new criteria mentioned in my report, this event does meet the criteria for event co-sponsorship, as the Friends Group are an established not-for-profit organization in Ponce Inlet. If the town council co-sponsors this event based on the submitted request, the total cost absorbed by the town would be $150 for the special event permit fee. Staff recommends approval of the request as the criteria have been met. The applicant, Ms. Mindy Ash, is with the Friends Group and is present to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Does anybody have any questions for Jackie or the applicant? Yes, Joe?
No. No questions. I thought it was pretty straightforward the way it was presented.
Bill?
No.
Gary? Does anyone, I don't have any questions. Does anyone in the audience have any questions with respect to this request for co-sponsorship and a waiver of $150 fee? Okay. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the co-sponsorship request made by the staff as written.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
A motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. And thank you for bringing this event to Ponce Inlet. Thank you. Now, Item B, request to pursue attorney general opinion on a preemption of long-term rental regulations. Mike or Cliff?
Yep, this will be Cliff.
Okay, so as you know, and as the newspaper was dutifully printing, recently we had a challenge to the town's rental registration ordinance. That challenge raises some interesting questions. Given the fact that the claim is that somehow we are preempted in pursuing this program, which we've had for a number of years, based on a statute that regulates the landlord-tenant relationship. In that regard, you have a memo. I won't bother reading it to you, but it basically says this is what we want to seek an AG opinion on to see if it's right. In the meantime, the case that was brought against the individual was, I want to say, dismissed or suspended. I'm not sure exactly procedurally where it is, with the idea that once we get this opinion, we know what to do next. The only additional piece of information I have, and you may know more than I do, is that the League of Cities has weighed in and said that they would like to join us in this effort. They cannot do so alone because they don't have standing, but they can provide us input, and they can also, we can use them to say,
this is not just a Ponce Inlet issue, because many, many cities do the exact same thing that we do. And so if we're wrong, so are a whole bunch of others.
Thank you, Cliff. Does anyone have any questions for our attorney on this matter?
No.
Anybody in the audience wish to come up and ask a question? Judge, yes, please.
Dennis Craig, 68 Seawind Circle. I don't know if it's a question more than anything else, but I read the memo, and I guess Mr. Smith did the memo?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I guess I got a couple questions about that. He indicated, I guess, he was looking to, distinguish the Ponce Inlet ordinance by basically referring to it as a registration and inspection ordinance. When I read your 3.18, I don't see that even mentions inspection. So it doesn't seem like your ordinance is an inspection ordinance at all. And then part of the other thing, too, is, am I wrong about that? Is there something about inspection in the ordinance?
The ordinance will be provided as a copy of the as a part of the opinion request. So I do not know whether or not Mr. Smith mentioned it one way or the other. It's been sort of his bailiwick because he handles code enforcement. But I can tell you, as you can probably imagine, all of the relevant materials are going to be supplied to the AG.
Okay. Well, kind of the point I wanted to make today would be that I think asking for an AG opinion in this circumstance would be futile. And let me tell you why. You know, the first rule of statutory construction is you look at the plain language. If you read the statute, it's very plain, it's unambiguous. So if there is no ambiguity to it, you go by the plain language of it. And it's a real short statute. It says the regulation of residential tenancies, the landlord-tenant relationship, and all other matters covered under this part are preempted to the state. This section supersedes any local government regulations on matters covered under this part, including, but not limited to, the screening process used by a landlord in approving tenancies, security deposits, rental agreement applications, fees associated with such applications, terms and conditions of rental agreements, the rights and responsibilities of the landlord and tenant, disclosures concerning the premises, the dwelling unit, the rental agreement, or the rights and responsibilities of the landlord and tenant, fees charged by the landlord, or notice requirements. Now, you know, the memo says that I'm reading this broadly. Well, the reason you read it broadly is the plain language is broad. That's first. Second, if you look at your ordinance, you'll see that there are things in your ordinance that specifically are precluded in that statute. For example, it says that there shall be a written lease between the owner and tenant, and that includes an explicit statement that the tenant agrees to follow these regulations. So the town ordinance is telling us that you have to have something specific in the written agreement, and it needs to be written. So when we go back to the statute, what's covered under the statute? The rental agreement. So Ponce is telling us what we have to have in the rental agreement, and specifically, that's preempted in the statute. It says the rental agreement. Next, it says a contact person must be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to respond to complaints regarding conduct of the occupants of the dwelling. That is directly on point with the rights and responsibilities of the landlord and tenant. It goes further. It talks that the owner has to maintain a vehicle registration for everybody in the unit. That's a regulation. And it further says that rentals of dwellings are prohibited unless all the requirements of the code are made. So the town is specifically trying to preclude people from even renting a house. So that's in general altogether. So when you apply the statute directly to your ordinance, it is specifically covered. Now, another part of it is this too. You know, he says, well, inspection, even though there's nothing related to inspection in your ordinance at all, right? He says, well, we can do an inspection. That's not precluded by the statute. Well, when you look at the statute, what does it stop you from regulating? The dwelling unit. So if you're stopped from regulating the dwelling unit, how is it that you can go in and do an inspection? So you see, all these things are covered. Now, as far as collecting the fee, you know, you want to charge $500.
Mayor, can I have point of order?
Oh, excuse me?
Point of order.
Oh, 5 minutes.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Is anybody opposed to having the judge complete his thoughts shortly?
Yes, ma'am. This is...
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. How much longer do you have, sir?
I'll wrap it up in
wrap
2 minutes.
Wrap it up? That's 2 minutes?
Fine. Okay. I'm
Are
good with that.
Are you comfortable?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
As far as charging a registration fee, when you look at the Senate, the impact statement that the Senate did in passing this bill, here's the government sector impact. It basically says, to the extent such local ordinances generate revenue for local governments, they will no longer collect those revenues. So there's no mistake about it. Now, part of the problem with asking for an AG opinion is this. This statute went into effect July 1st, 2023. So if I'm correct with the plain language of the statute, everything that was collected last year ought to go back to whoever paid it in. Next, new payments are due by October 1st. Who knows whether the AG is going to give an opinion before October 1st? Are you going to keep enforcing this ordinance, even though now you have notice that there's a preemption statute out there? Are you still going to now knowingly enforce a statute against the preemption statute? So asking for the AG report and continuing to enforce this ordinance can create further problems for you. So my suggestion is you take it up now. It's plain language. Why put it off and cause more problems for the future? Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you. Our attorney, do you wish to weigh in at this point?
I know you'll be shocked to find out that I do. You know, Judge Craig is someone who I've appeared before, argued before, and never had the ability to cut off his opportunity to talk. So there's that. But I will say this. His points are well made, but they also ignore something that is a reality in Florida and in other places in our country right now. And so in that regard, and I want to be cautious about how I say this because I don't want folks to get the wrong idea. This is not a pro or anti-abortion stance, but I want you to understand this argument about plain meaning. Florida had in its constitution the following. It's called the right of privacy, and it says every natural person has the right to be let alone and free from governmental intrusion into the person's private life except as otherwise provided herein. Until recently, very recently, the state assumed, residents of the state assumed, that protected the right of free choice in matters of abortion and such. And the reason they did that is because, among other things, the case that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court recently reversed, said there is no implied right of privacy in the Constitution of the United States. And that is exactly why Florida put that exact right of privacy in the Florida Constitution. Our Florida Supreme Court said, yeah, I know what it says. It doesn't mean that. And so the point being that I don't know what the Attorney General will say as a part of this administration. So there is a basis to ask. However, there's a risk, and the risk that he mentioned, i.e. the financial risk of going forward, may end up with an opinion that causes us to have to consider, and we haven't yet, whether we would have to refund money, and it could be substantial, for that year or so period that the fees were being collected. So it is ultimately your choice to make, but as I can tell you, having appeared before many judges in the state, and not just Craig, just Judge Craig, one man's plain meaning is another man's ambiguity.
Thank you. And that was what I was going to suggest, is that, you know, the rules of statutory construction and also what may be implicit in the statute itself, I think it may counsel hesitation, but I do think it's appropriate that we do move forward with the understanding that we may have to refund, with the understanding that maybe what we need to do is, and I don't know how to do this properly, is not collect or hold October 1 money in some type of an escrow or trust. I don't know how to do that. But my opinion is we are hardly alone as a municipality doing this. I did have the opportunity of speaking with people at the Florida League of Cities last week. This is something that needs to be clarified. I appreciate the caution from Your Honor. I do appreciate what you have cautioned us with, but my opinion would be to move forward with the opinion by the Attorney General. Do I have anything from everybody?
Agreed.
You agree? Agreed? Agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed. Anyone in the audience wish to speak? Seeing none, do you need a motion, a consensus to move forward?
Because it involves the expenditure of some amount of money, I don't know exactly what, I'm guessing $2,000 to $5,000 ballpark, you might want to make a motion.
Would anyone like to make the motion?
Sure.
I'll make a motion that we pursue the Attorney General's opinion on preemption of long-term rental regulations for Ponce Inlet.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
A second.
May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Judge. I do appreciate your time with this.
There you are.
And your efforts with this. I do appreciate it. Thank you very much. You. Private citizen, I recognize that. It's my, I don't know how to call him anything else, okay, other than, okay. I will put that on the record again for you. You are here as a private citizen, so thank you. Okay, so moving along, and thank you, Cliff. We are now down to item C, a discussion on the athletic court reservation system, right? Yes. Okay, Mike?
And Jackie Alex will take this one as well.
Here we go.
Hello again, Council. Over the course of these past 5 months, staff has researched and consulted various experts on this topic. I first would like to thank the town attorney, as staff worked very closely with her on ADA requirements for online reservation systems. And additionally, I would like to thank the group of residents that have been part of this discussion. With their passion and commitment, they have been a really great resource for considerations. There are two non-mutually exclusive requirements that the town must abide by with respect to the ADA compliance. First is the new technical standards that all content on our website must be met by April 2027. The second, and is current, the town must provide a reasonable modification to any public service it offers with request for an accommodation that's made. Now, even if staff finds an online reservation system that is fully compliant with the new technical standards, the town's standing legal obligation remains that upon request, staff must provide an individual with a disability a reasonable modification to access the online reservation system if the individual still cannot access that system. Both public and internal discussions led to 10 suggested options for reasonable modifications. The town attorney's role has been to advise staff, the Cultural Services Board, and the public about the legal risks involved with each option. Additional feedback was also sought from an ADA subject matter expert. Additional research included investigating multiple online court reservation systems, finding only one that is in full compliance now with the new technical standards. This is provided by our current website vendor, and additional information on this service is within my staff report. My report provides you three recommendations that have been provided over the course of this work, including one from staff. Staff's recommendation is based on the key point that both the town attorney and the ADA specialist have touched on, which is reasonable modifications must always be related to the individual's specific limitations caused by the disability. The 10 suggested options exemplify the town's commitment to adapting practices to provide equal opportunity to our services. However, with no outstanding ADA compliance requests for reasonable modifications, staff is reluctant to implement any at this time. Therefore, staff's recommendation is to update the current reservation system to fully meet the new technical standards, continue to refer those requesting special accommodations to the town's ADA coordinator or the website administrator, and upon request, implement a reasonable modification based on an individual's specific limitation caused by a disability. Additionally, from a customer service standpoint that may benefit future ADA accommodation requests, staff will schedule the opening of online reservation systems during business hours. Staff is requesting direction from Town Council on the path forward for the future of the online reservation system, balancing the appropriate level of modifications to ensure compliance with the ADA, along with the acceptable level of risks. Three recommendations are provided in my report for your consideration, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. And I did have the benefit of listening to our residents at all the cultural services meetings. And I think I could say, and I see you out there, is that our residents want to continue an online reservation system, and we want to accommodate their wishes as best we can. And we heard from our attorney about the level of risk, the staff, and if I understand this, if I could just encapsulate this, if I may, is we do have till April of 2027 to implement the technical requirements, and we do have a software that's been located that essentially accommodates ADA issues.
That's correct.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So if we were to do nothing this year but maintain what we have, our online reservation, the system that we have right now, we could budget for next year or the following year the cost of the $12,000, I think, for the $12,500 to implement the newer software, and then budget each year thereafter the $8,500. So we don't have to implement it right now.
Correct, as long as we're addressing any reasonable modifications
right.
as they come
and
up.
And we would do that, and we would do that anyway. So in a nutshell, it seems to me that is something, and I don't want to talk for the residents who are here, but that's something that probably they would find acceptable, because we're maintaining an online reservation system now with a view within the three-year time period to pay for and implement the new online system. Is that in a nutshell?
Yes, ma'am, okay. Your understanding is correct.
That's good. Okay, I appreciate that. A lot of work went into this. I thank everybody. A lot of work went into this. A great deal of our attorney's time, staff time, resident time, meetings, so all of it. So let me open it up. Questions for Jackie, questions for our attorney, anyone?
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
And again, Jackie, you did touch on it, but I just want to make sure that I'm totally clear on it. So we do not have any ADA complaints as of today, correct?
Correct. According for our online reservation system there.
Correct. Did we ever find out what the complaint was? Because I read through your documentation, but what was the limitation that this individual had? And did they ever file a formal complaint?
It was not a formal complaint. It was a request and to address suggesting us reach out to our town attorney to confirm what they believed. And the request was for an outstanding reservation for an unstated amount of time. And that is not available to other people with or without disabilities. And so therefore, our town attorney found that that was not a reasonable modification.
Okay. And I'm actually with Mayor on this because, you know, having one source, I'm assuming across the United States, at $12,500, then $8,500 going forward, this seems like it is a pretty much new type program. And if anyone is smart enough to jump in behind them, it will drive the cost down over the next 2 years, in my opinion. So I'm very comfortable with hanging on as long as we do not have any complaints. And again, you've already addressed it. If we do, that you will take care of it. So, you know, plowing through this, you know, I'll say my biggest concern looking through this and looking, no offense, Cliff, but looking at our legal bills, we've spent a lot of money on this.
Yes,
a
sir.
Lot of money. And, you know, I wish there was ways sometimes that we couldn't, but I agree with the town. We had no choice. When someone says, you know, talk to your attorney, that triggers in my mind, just like every citizen I ever talk to, if they ever mention the word legal, I always say, call 1-800-MIKE-DISHER, and I'm out of the conversation. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Joe?
The original complaint was withdrawn, was it correct?
Correct. Bill?
Well, the complaint and sent an email, and it was in the package that you gave us.
Talking to the mic.
I'm sorry. I happened to read all 42 of the emails that were sent, and it was 40-2 to maintain the existing system and then look into the ADA. So your third recommendation on page 5 of 5 hits the nail on the head, and it gives us the time that the mayor suggested. So I'm 100% fine. And the gentleman before, Mr. White, was talking about as a high school principal, well, I had to be ADA compliant. And I'm going to give you an example of what I had to do. I had a child in a wheelchair, motorized wheelchair, that wanted to learn and operate a sound system and a light board in our auditorium. Well, as you know, they're always on a second floor. So I went to the drama director, and we made arrangements to actually put both systems down on the first floor. I had the opportunity to design a high school for Broward County, Cypress Bay, and we put an elevator in for the second floor. That's not a reasonable accommodation because if the electric goes out, they can't get up there. So we actually built a walkway inside the auditorium so that they could have get up to the second floor for the system. So it was reasonable. It cost money, but it was reasonable. And this is going to cost us a little money, but it's reasonable. Now, people have asked me, why do they have those little circles on the end of the streets? You know why they're there?
The circles.
You know, the little pads? When I had my school's renovation done in the 1980s, they were there so a person that is as a sight problem will be able to feel that they've come to a curb. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It really is interesting. And this packet was extremely well done, and the response from the attorney, I thought, was outstanding.
Yes. The attorney did an exceptional job, and she was excellent at the Cultural Services Board in responding to the many questions. Gary?
Well, I just have a statement, since I believe I'm the only person on the council that has played this game, and I've played under several of the other options that we suggest, and my humble opinion is the reservation system is the most fair and is the easiest one to use. It may irritate a few people, but most people enjoy knowing they get to play when they get there without having to wait.
Now, hearing how the council will be moving, it's pretty clear. I know a number of you are here for this item. You're more than welcome to come up and speak if you feel need be. But yes, Lisa, come on up.
Lisa Genovese, 4628 Riverwalk Village Court. I just want to say thank you to Jackie and Dan and Mike and all the town council for all the time you spent on this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to? Yes.
Hi again. Kimberly Comfort, 85 Ocean Way Drive. I don't really have a dog in this fight. As you can tell, you all make accommodations for me. I do have a sister-in-law who was playing this and came and spoke to you all passionately about what they're. I am all for that reservation system because I am a person who's standing and sitting is very difficult. And I can move some. I doubt I could run and play pickleball, but if I had that opportunity, if you had had a first-come, first-serve system, yeah, my energy, my pain level would be gone before I'd get a chance to play. So I do think that this sounds to me to be the most reasonable way of handling it, you know, because at some point we may find somebody saying, can I play in a wheelchair on there? I don't know if we're going to be able to make that happen or not. But, you know, you have to look at, like, what you can do. You do the best you can do. I try to get to as much as I can do, and then cities, towns try to make the best accommodations. There are situations where you have historic towns where they can't make the accommodations because their buildings are protected for being historically accurate. So you just can't get in there if you're in a wheelchair or something. So I really do appreciate that you all have looked into this heavily. And I do appreciate that our town does make the accommodations as we need them. So thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly. Is there anybody else? Yes.
Mary Lou Fillingham, 33 Ocean Way Drive. I want to personally thank Mr. Disher and Dan Scales and Jackie for doing all the hard work on this, and I'm glad you all are, well, I know you haven't taken a vote or anything, but at least you're positive about it. So thank you very much, because I know we all have spent a lot of time looking into this. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Okay, so you're looking for instructions to move forward. Is that by consensus? I think you heard the consensus. Are you comfortable with what we've said to move forward?
Yes, ma'am. It sounds like the staff's recommendation.
Yes, it is the staff's recommendation, and I really want to thank the staff, our attorneys, and the boards, and our residents. So that is what we're going to do, everyone. I think that is excellent. So, yeah. Okay, now, moving on. We have no items under 9 and 10 on the agenda. On 11, we have a first reading, Ordinance 2024-03, the amendments to the LUDC. Cliff, would you please read by title only?
Yes, ma'am. Ordinance 2024-03, read by title only, an ordinance of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending the Land Use and Development Code, Article 3, Use Regulations, Section 3.17, docks, boathouses, boat slips, and piers, providing definitions and standards, providing for codification, providing for severability, providing for conflicts, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Cliff. Hi, Patty.
Hi there. Good morning, Mayor and Council. Agenda item 11A. is regarding Ordinance 2024-03, an amendment to LUDC Section 3.17, docks, boathouses, boat slips, and piers. Just a little background on this. The impetus of this amendment stems from a 2023 variance that a resident was seeking relief for the maximum dock size requirements in the LUDC. The applicant was requesting a 525 square foot dock, which also, in addition, included a 2,000 square foot walkway. The long access walkway was necessary to cross through 500 feet of wetlands to reach open water from the upland portion of the property. The maximum total square footage allowed for the